Well, let me just officially welcome everyone today to Conversations with the Masters. I have with me Ken Wilber. My name is Mary Allen. I'm America's Inner Peace Coach, author of The Power of Inner Choice, and, of course, your host of this Conversations with the Masters series. Before I officially introduce Ken Wilber, I want to just welcome all of our live listeners and all of you that may be listening to this as a recording. And particular thank you to all of you for continuing to spread the word about this Conversations with the Masters series. The call is being recorded, so you can go back and listen again, or you can refer a friend. I have a feeling this is going to be one of those calls you will want to listen to again and again. I'm hoping you all have cleared all your distractions, have got a notepad out, have your full being really ready to take in today's call. And as always, if you've pre-registered for this call, you will receive a special follow-up email later this week. So while every Conversations with the Masters interview is very special, I'm particularly honored to share time with our guest today. I actually first learned about Ken's work at a Tony Robbins seminar, and then my father introduced me to the CD series Cosmic Consciousness, which I have to say I've listened to multiple times, and I highly, highly recommend. For those that don't know of Ken Wilber, he's published more than 24 books. Ken has created what is widely considered the first truly comprehensive integral map of human experience. And this integral framework explores, integrates, and encompasses the major insights and conclusions of nearly every human knowledge domain in existence. In 1997, Ken founded the Integral Institute, which is a nonprofit think tank bringing hundreds of the brightest integral thinkers together to really help evolve this integral model. And in 2003, Ken started recording cutting-edge conversations with people at the top of their profession, people including Michael Crichton, Deepak Chopra, Tony Robbins, Jenpo Roshi, Larry Dossey, and if you don't know those names, I recommend you Google them because you'll want to know who they are. These are available weekly on the Integral Naked website, integralnaked.org. In 2005, Ken created Integral Life Spiritual Center, and its yearly gatherings consistently bring together over 40 of the world's finest spiritual teachers, all of whom dedicated to exploring a truly integral spirituality. And Ken's latest endeavor is Integral Life. We'll hear a little bit more about that on today's call. And this offers a real practical, easy-to-understand way to genuinely integrate life, creating an integral life. And so we're going to be hearing more about that today. So, Ken, I just welcome.
Well, hi, Mary. It's great to be here.
Fabulous, fabulous. Well, I know we have limited time together, and since a lot of our listeners are on a path of personal and spiritual growth, evolving their consciousness, I'd love really just to, you know, maybe the place to start is on states and stages of consciousness, and maybe towards the end of the call we can touch on the five key elements of the integral map.
Well, sure. Incidentally, by the way, I loved your book, The Power of Inner Choice.
Thank you.
Yeah, good stuff.
Thank you.
Well, maybe the easiest way to explain my work is to say that I've spent the last 30 years looking at maps of human potential, maps of the human mind and maps of human development, both east and west, and then looked for a system that would bring them all together, that would include them all. And the result of that is called an integral map, integral meaning comprehensive, inclusive, and it has five elements, which we call quadrants, levels, lines, states, and types. And on the one hand, that might sound, you know, pretty complex and daunting, But it's really just a summary of aspects of your own present awareness right now that you can get in touch with quite easily. Quadrants, for example, represent the inside and the outside of an individual and a collective. So every individual has both realities on their own interior that they can see by introspecting and realities on their exterior. Their behavior, the way their body or mind looks to science, objective third-person views of the individual human being, and so on. And then every individual is part of various groups. And those groups can be looked at from within, with their own values and drives, motivations, the collective consciousness of the group. And it can also be studied from without, in terms of its objective formal features, its language structures, its rules of behavior, the mores and ethics of the culture, and so on. But these four quadrants, or four elements of awareness, also shake down, are also represented in the world's languages by pronouns. So the interior of an individual is represented by the pronoun I, and the interior of the group is represented by the pronoun we, and the exterior of an individual is represented by the pronoun it, third person, and the collective of exteriors is its, plural. So we have I, we, it, and its. And these also, these three or four major dimensions can be represented as art, morals, and science. Art is the beauty in the eye of the beholder, and morals is what we choose to do, what the right thing is, and science studies objective truth, it and its. It's also the good, the true, and the beautiful. So the important point about the quadrants is each of them tells us some important aspect about reality, something important about ourselves, some important truth that we want to be in touch with. And the sad thing is that if you look at human endeavor, we find, whether it's looking in day-to-day activities or looking at universities, that usually just one or at most two of these quadrants are taken to be real, and the others are dismissed. So the modern Enlightenment worldview has been called scientific materialism, and it takes as real only third-person objective its, and it dismisses art, morals, dismisses I and we as having any reality. And, of course, that really is a disaster and cuts out an enormous amount of human experience and human existence and human truth, and certainly cuts out those areas of growth and human potential that, you know, you've spent so much time studying and that I'm sure your listeners have as well. So the point is that whenever we are approaching a problem, we want to make sure that we take at least these three or four perspectives on the problem. Look at it from how an eye sees it, look at it from how we see it, and look at it in objective scientific terms. Mm. So that's quadrants. That's the first element, and so you can see that even though it has kind of a new name, it's actually something that people are very familiar with, and it's something that you can be aware of in your awareness right now. Exactly. You can find in your awareness that aspect that you would refer to with an I am having feelings, I am having a conversation, and so on. And you can find those aspects that you would label as a we. We are in relationship, we are married, we are working together, and so on. And entities that can be described as an it or its, including just the objects and the environment. But again, the sad thing is most approaches to problems, whether it's studying consciousness or economics or education, only take one of those as real and dismiss the others. Okay. And so that's not integral. That's not comprehensive. That is no way to go about finding a life of fullness.
Right.
So that's one of the first items that we want to look at.
So Ken, if we've got, let's say, for example, maybe to take this into real-life application, So like taking like a company that's maybe more in the realm of science and that objective practicality and so forth, that wants to be a more integral company.
Right.
And take into account more of the, you know, the morals piece and more of the individual.
Right.
Like what might be some steps that a company could take to be more inclusive instead of staying in their little, you know, corporate box?
Right. Well, we'll see, of course, more as we go through the rest of the elements. But just to start right off the bat, there's been a whole revolution in business consulting that has moved away from just strict product quality control, which has been the prime area of focus of business over the last 20, 30, 40 years, to looking at corporate culture, to what individuals in the company want, what makes them happy, what makes them feel satisfied at work, what do they want out of work. And people that look at that have found a rather startling change in the last 10 to 20 years, which is that many, many people rank job satisfaction as more important than salary. In other words, they want meaningful work. They want work that connects to their I, work that connects to their we, and not just work that pays them in it dollars. And so companies are starting to hire business consultants to help them pay attention to their corporate culture, to the kind of values that they represent, the kind of motivations and needs that they present to their employees, and how to make their employees feel that the workplace is a place that's meaningful to them. It's not just an assembly line of meaningless its and bits being processed and pushed down the line. Corporations that have that corporate culture have very high rates of turnover, very high rates of absenteeism, very high rates of health problems, and so on. So just looking at these interiors, taking them into account, has an enormous impact on how productive the company is, how happy the employees are. And, of course, recently there's been even a more major shift. And that's that a lot of employees want their work to be part of a spiritual life. They want to see the workplace as somehow sacred. And so that has become a driving force in American business as well. Mm. And so all of that, from just looking at all four quadrants and not just looking at the exteriors.
Right.
So if we do look at interiors, well, what we find in all four quadrants is that there are also levels of development. And we see this just everywhere we look in the exterior physical universe. Evolution moves from quarks to atoms to molecules to cells to organisms. And each level includes the previous level and then adds something new and something more inclusive. And we find the same thing happens in human development. On the interior of humans, there's the equivalent of atoms, molecules, cells, organisms. And these are levels of development that human beings go through as they're growing up. And it sounds pretty simple and pretty straightforward, and it actually is. The interior life of human beings hasn't been really studied in its developmental aspects until this century. And so one of the first individuals to do so was Gene Gebser, and he named these interior levels of development. Now, again, these are levels of development that all individuals go through starting from birth, as archaic to magic to mythic to rational to pluralistic to integral and higher. And these govern the nature and the value, the types of values that you find at each of the major levels of development in a human being. And so we can look at the three intermediate levels, the mythic, the rational, and the pluralistic, And those are the three main values that you find in today's culture. So when we talk about culture wars, we talk about these three values being at war with each other. So first, there's the standard mythic fundamentalist traditional value structure.
And this is the blue level, right?
This is in the Claire Grace system. This would be a blue V-meme, yes. And
I always think the colors are so helpful because you can always remember a color.
Exactly. And this is tends to be very conformist and tends to believe that there is one and only one right way to see the world, and it's usually expressed in a single book, the Bible or the Koran or the Torah. And it's very fundamentalist and very rigid, very usually ethnocentric, often, frankly, misogynist and often patriarchal and often militaristic. But that is a value structure that is quite widespread in this country, and whether it's Southern Baptists or fundamentalist Jews, it's a very widespread value. The next level of development is rational. So an individual moves from mythic beliefs into rational beliefs. And here the emergence of science and scientific methodology comes to the fore, and this is associated particularly with the Western Enlightenment. And Voltaire's battle cry of the Enlightenment was, remember the cruelties. Remember the cruelties that a mythic God had inflicted on humanity, and basically grow up, move into beliefs that there is some evidence for, that you can find truths for which there is some sort of proof or evidence. And that's essentially what science does. And so these are our modern values, and they're values particularly of freedom and individuality and truth and justice. And these, of course, have marked the various representative democracies that emerged at the time that this level of consciousness emerged. And it's still a very powerful level in this culture. And those who believe only in this level believe in what's called scientific materialism. And they're just like the fundamentalists at the previous level. They believe that their values and only their values are correct. And that's one of the things we find in the first about two-thirds of the major levels of development, is that each of them thinks that its values are the only correct values in existence.
And this would be where capitalism, where the Constitution got formed, and this is an orange meme.
That's correct.
If we relate it to the spiral dynamics.
That's correct. And, of course, there are any number of developmental models in the Jane Lovinger model of self-development. This is the conscientious level. Again, there's about a dozen multiple intelligences, mathematical, ethical, interpersonal, intrapersonal, cognitive, and so on. But each of these different lines move through these fundamental levels, and we'll get to that when we talk about lines in a moment. But so the important point is, it's like having a single mountain with different paths going up it, and the different paths each have a different view and a different perspective and see different things. But you can say that paths are all at 2,000 feet. Or paths are all at 3,000 feet or at 4,000 feet. And there are certain similarities in all the paths that you find at 4,000 feet and certain similarities in all the paths that you find at 5,000 feet. And that's true of these colors. These colors are essentially marking off altitudes in your own awareness, altitudes that basically represent the number of perspectives that you can take. And so we've moved from an early level that we didn't specifically talk about, which is an egocentric level of magenta and emotional, sexual, instinctual knowledge. And that's just a first-person knowledge. It's narcissistic, it's egocentric, it's only aware of its own immediate gratifications and what it can do for itself. And then the next level is where we get to this blue V-meme. And that's a second-person perspective is added. So now it's not just what's right for me, but what's right for my group. So you, second person being you, are brought into the picture. And at Blue, a second-person perspective can be taken. And so it moves from egocentric types of awareness, which were at the previous level, into ethnocentric types of awareness, where the group is first and foremost, and what the group says is right, and my country right or wrong, and so on. And that is indeed a conformist structure. And because it doesn't yet have rationality, it's very heavy on myths and mythology. It really believes literally that Moses parted the Red Sea, and Mary was born of a biological virgin, and the Lord rained frogs down on the Egyptians, and so on. So that's typical of a fundamentalist altitude. But now we're moving into the orange altitude, and what that adds is a third-person perspective. And third-person is it or he or she or they or them, and it means looking at something in an objective fashion. And so science, it comes into existence basically at this orange level. And science is looking for evidence, and it's looking for truth, objective truth. And so that becomes a powerful drive. And it's a powerful drive in human beings today when it emerges. And in humans today, it tends to emerge around 10, 11, 12 years old. And then a person can move from a magic and mythic level into a rational level. And that is somebody who has who is solely at that level and hasn't moved to any higher levels, believes in what's called scientific materialism, that the world is fundamentally a world described exactly as physical science describes it. It's made only of material atoms and subatomic particles, and there is no aesthetics, no morals, no spirituality, no nothing. Just nothing but this sort of third-person scientific knowledge is the only thing that's taken to be real. And then moving to the next level, we move from modern values to postmodern values. And these add a fourth-person perspective. And so now it's reflecting on science, and it comes to the conclusion that science is basically just a cultural production. It doesn't have any more reality than any other type of knowledge. And therefore, it attempts to start including other types of awareness. So it will start looking at interiors and start to attempt to include I and we. And this is the basis of, again, the postmodern worldview and at multicultural sensitivity. And there's an enormous emphasis on not oppressing or excluding others. And this is a relatively new development. It came into existence really in the 60s and was actually what was driving most of the values of the 60s. So that included feminism, including the previously unheard voice of women, and environmentalism, including the previously unheard voice of the environment and watching out for its needs and treating it ethically. And the individuals following this pluralistic or green stage of development are often called cultural creatives. And they're ones that began to show an enormous interest in spirituality and yoga and interior endeavors. But they're still part of what's called first-tier values. So they still think that their values and their values alone are real. Mm-hmm. So they don't think that science is real. They certainly don't think that myth is real or has anything to contribute. And they think that their values and their values alone are real.
Right, and this is where you see the clash between the environmentalist and, you know, the capitalist.
Exactly.
And this is the green mean, by the way, which kind of is fitting because I think, you know, this is often associated with kind of being green and environment.
Exactly.
Kind of fits really well.
Exactly. And so these last three levels in particular, as I was saying, kind of drive the culture wars. Traditional values versus modern values versus postmodern values. And so this simple developmental sequence gives us an enormously useful way to understand what is going on in the culture war. And also, if we, of course, use it and look at ourselves, gives us an extremely useful way to understand where we are in our own vertical growth and development. And that's particularly important because of the next stage. The next stage is almost always called something like integrative or integral.
Yeah, so this is the yellow stage, which I'm so glad. Let's definitely talk about this yellow stage of consciousness.
Yeah, because all of a sudden, consciousness at this level adds a fifth-person perspective, becomes more inclusive. Each of the levels of development are continuing to expand. They're going from egocentric into ethnocentric into world-centric. And this is certainly true with yellow, or with the first of the integral or integrative stages. And remember that we said a defining characteristic of the previous stages is that they thought that their own values were the only real values in existence. And everybody else is just simply wrong and just absolutely confused. But at yellow, something Claire Graves called a momentous leap of meaning occurs. And therefore, he called these the beginning of second tier to differentiate it from first tier. And what happens is that, first of all, there's an enormous drop in fear across the board. And second of all, there's an intuitive understanding that all of these previous values have some significance. They're there for a reason. They have some degree of importance. And so they're to be included in any overall map or picture of reality. Because each level does introduce its own new and important truths. And these are transcended and included in the next level and so on. But every level from birth becomes an ingredient in the makeup of the mind, in the makeup of your own awareness. Again, just like atoms become parts of molecules, molecules become parts of cells, cells become part of organisms. Each of these levels is an ingredient of its successors, and there's an important reason. There's a place for all of them. And so all of a sudden, somebody at yellow starts to develop a genuine compassion and a genuine inclusiveness for basically all people and all values. And it's not that all of them are liked or embraced, but that it's understood somehow that they're all significant. They're all in existence for a reason. Mm-hmm. And so that integral level is the first, for example, that would create an integral model of the human being. That would say, wait a minute, all of these various dimensions are an important part of the human being. The quadrants, first, second, and third person, those are all important. Levels of development, these altitudes of development, the archaic to magic to mythic to rational to pluralistic to integral, these are all important. These have a role to play. Human beings are actually at these stages, and these are important to take into account. And it would include then items we'll get to in just a minute, including lines and states and types. And so we start to get, with these integral levels of development, a genuinely comprehensive view of a situation and a genuinely comprehensive full view of the human being and its capacities, its potentials, and the dimensions that make it up. And so this is what's so exciting about the integral stages of development and the integral maps and models that they're starting to bring out, is that for the first time in history, literally, mm-hmm. we have maps of the human being that are comprehensive,
yes.
that don't leave stuff out, that shake it all down and summarize it into a handful of essential ingredients that are found in all cultures and at all times. And therefore,
Ken, let's take, for example, a person that's at this yellow level.
Right.
I can never remember the integrated level.
Uh-huh.
And how in a real-life situation they may interact and acknowledge the conformist blue, the rational orange, and the kind of the more creative green type.
Right.
Can you give kind of a real-life example of that?
Uh-huh, sure. If you put four people in a room, somebody who's blue, somebody who's orange, somebody who's green, somebody who's integral. In other words, somebody who has traditional values, modern values, postmodern values, and integral values. And you let them talk for about an hour, and then you interview them. You'll find that the first three, the traditional values, modern values, and postmodern values, don't like each other. They'll say, well, just something about that person I didn't like, something about that person I didn't like, something about that person I just didn't like. I just disagree with them. I just don't get along with them. But none of them will say that about yellow. They invariably find yellow to be not necessarily somebody that's agreeing with them, but somebody that's not off-putting. Because yellow is not contesting. Yellow isn't confrontational. Yellow will listen to something that a fundamentalist says and extract the key elements that are true in what the fundamentalist says. The fundamentalist believes that it's important to live life based on a set of principles, for example. And virtually everybody can agree to something like that. So yellow has actually been called the universal donor. It has something for everybody. And what it means for ourselves is that it's the first stage. One of the reasons we want to pay attention to these stages is that it's the first stage where we can start to, in a sense, integrate ourselves as well. And we can start to draw together all of these different dimensions and all these different life experiences and have them start to add up as a whole. So we start to find room for everything. There's a place, there's room, there's a coherence to our life that simply didn't exist at the previous levels or stages because they were just too busy disagreeing with all the other levels, including those parts of themselves that came from those other levels. So it's an interior civil war as well. The culture wars are not just something going on out there. There's something going on in here. And unfortunately, this part of the human potential capacity is largely overlooked by human potential coaches and by life coaches. Simply because, on the one hand, it's based on kind of academic research and can sound sort of egg-heady and, it's all that intellectual crap. But they're very real stages. They represent very real realities. And very different needs come out of these stages. Abraham Maslow, for example, was one of the first to study what he eventually called the hierarchy of needs, because he found that people at these different altitudes have different motivations. So at the first level, it's physiological needs. Then it shifts to safety needs. From there, it shifts to belongingness needs, the blue or traditional, conformist, belongingness. and from there into the modern, where self-esteem needs start to emerge. And it's not so important that I belong to a group. It's important what do I think of myself and my own autonomy and my own capacity for independent thinking. And then from there into green, for the self-actualization needs emerge. And that's finding one's fullest potential in as many dimensions as one can, and not oppressing both classes of people on the outside. Don't oppress blacks or gays or women. And on the inside, don't oppress any of these dimensions of yourself, mm-hmm. body, mind, soul, or spirit. And then from there, the highest set of needs that he discovered in the integral levels, he called self-transcendence. And that's when you don't just fulfill your own potential, you find the transcending of yourself into something much larger, into a ground of all being, into a sacred ground, into an ultimate and radiant and infinite awareness, unqualifiable awareness as such. And so these levels are important not only to help understand the world around us, but to help us understand what's driving us and what we need and what we can do about it. Mm-hmm. And so we start to get a much fuller map of the human condition. And again, something that you don't usually get when you go to a particular psychotherapist or a particular coach or a particular spiritual teacher. They themselves are usually at one level and will, one way or another, filter their teaching through the values of that level. Mm-hmm. And so you end up getting basically just a one-level education.
And each of these levels we can think of as just as different levels of consciousness. Do people really move necessarily from blue to orange to green to yellow in that order? Can there be some skipping around, or if somebody, because I know we have blues, oranges, greens, and we probably have yellows too listening in on this line.
Right.
If somebody's a blue or an orange, What's involved, really, to move to the next higher level?
Well, let me answer that in a bit of a roundabout way by saying that the next component of the five components in the AQUAL or integral model is what we call developmental lines. And the point, developmental lines, many people know them as multiple intelligences. And they're called developmental lines because, like everything else in the psyche, they develop. They start their own early stages and grow and develop into increasingly more complex and sophisticated and inclusive levels of development. In other words, they move up the mountain. They move up these altitudes. And they move up these levels. And so you can, but they don't necessarily do so at the same rate. So these multiple intelligences include things like what we normally think of as intelligence, which is cognitive intelligence. It's what IQ tests measure. There's also emotional intelligence. There's interpersonal intelligence. There's moral or ethical intelligence. There's kinesthetic or bodily intelligence. There's mathematical intelligence. And there's a self-development. Or intelligence. There's aesthetic or artistic development. And those multiple intelligences don't necessarily develop at the same time. And so even though the altitudes going up the mountain are the same and the general characteristics are the same, somebody at orange has certain specific characteristics that don't change no matter what intelligence you're in. But the intelligences themselves can develop in different speeds. So it can be very uneven. You can have somebody who is at a very high yellow level of development cognitively, but is at blue morally, and maybe at red, the previous color emotionally. So a person's actual, what we call psychograph, you took a sort of a snapshot of where you were in overall development, it would appear pretty uneven. You'd be, you know, pretty high in some capacities, medium in other capacities, and low in yet others. So overall development in that sense isn't linear. Everybody's overall development is unique. But the intelligences themselves don't skip stages. They do move through these basic stages in essentially the same way. So somebody developing emotional intelligence is going to move from blue to orange to green to yellow. Oh. But there could be a dozen other levels of development that they're at in these other intelligences. So this is something that we've just found through research and study. And some people kind of feel really boxed in by that. They don't like the notion that there are these sort of fixed levels that they have to go through. But it's really just a way of tracking an individual's own growth and development. And their overall growth and development is not linear at all. They can be at very different levels in these different multiple intelligences. But again, it helps to simply try and notice which level or altitude you're at, because that gives you a sense of where you are, what your needs are, and also what you need to do to develop to the next stage. Mm-hmm. And essentially, to develop to the next stage, you need to start including more of the characteristics of the next stage in your awareness. Mm-hmm. So there's a what Robert Keegan calls challenge and support is what's necessary for development. And challenge means if you're at, for example, a blue fundamentalist traditional value structure, to start challenging it, to start looking at other perspectives, to start taking into account other truths, and to hold in mind, you know, what if this isn't true? What if my belief in the literal word-for-word truth of the Bible isn't correct? What if I'm wrong? What if there are different perspectives? And so you're starting to incorporate a third person, multiple perspective, into your awareness, and you're starting to support that. And that will help you move from a more fundamentalist orientation into a more scientific and open orientation. And again, this is important because a lot of people, simply being at one stage, mistake the values of that stage as being the only correct values. So a lot of consultants, for example, a lot of business consultants have come into the market to help orange business become sensitive to minorities and sensitive to other cultures, and to move, in other words, from orange to green, and to take up a postmodern pluralistic stance.
Mm-hmm. And bring that meaning into the workplace?
Yes. And so but they then themselves mistake green values as being the only true values around. Whereas what's often the case is in businesses, you'll find that accountants do well who are at a blue altitude. They like the rigidity, they like the conformity, they like not having any surprises or just sitting there and doing their work in a straightforward and non-original manner. Mm. And then individual in sales, our marketing often tend to be orange. They're very driven, and let's go out and do it. And
achievement-oriented.
orange is called the achiever self. Mm-hmm. So it wants to do things with excellence and accomplishment and achievement. And so often that works really well in that department. And then people in human services do really well who are at green. So, again, it's not that one size fits all.
What's the shift between, say, green into yellow? Like, what's their focus?
Well, that's where all this quote, dramatic, momentous leap of meaning occurs. Because, among other things, what happens at yellow is all of the previous conflicting values that were at each other's throats, and therefore in your own being, values that were conflicting, all of a sudden are not conflicting.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, there's room for everything.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, an integral view understands that there's room for blue and orange and green in the overall makeup of humanity, mm-hmm. and understands that it's going to be running into people at these different stages and will intuitively learn to adjust its language to different altitudes. And so they'll kind of fall into being able to speak with somebody at blue. They'll fall into being able to speak with somebody at orange. And they'll fall into being able to speak to somebody at green. And that's a very, very important because of the coherence and the unity and the fullness
mm-hmm.
that yellow and the integral stages themselves bring into being. And so that means in your own being that you're going to have some blue motivations, you're going to have some orange motivations, you're going to have some green motivations, different multiple intelligences will be at these different altitudes,
mm-hmm.
and there'll be an interior battle going on.
Mm-hmm.
But when you move to yellow, all of that tends to drop out.
Right.
And there is all of a sudden there's room for everything. And that's why I think Claire Graves found a dramatic drop in fear, because conflict and anxiety and fear just don't seem to have room in a mind that is all-inclusive.
Right.
It can actually make room for all of these and intuitively understand that they're important.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it is important.
And I've read that there's the percentage of the population in these higher levels of consciousness is around 5%, but there's a certain practice that kind of helps boost that up to more like 40% in 4 years, and that is
meditation.
Yeah, and so why is that?
Well, that's what's so interesting. There's been a lot of study on how to get human adults to transform.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, to move vertically through one of these levels, to one of these altitudes. And literally nothing has been found to do so except meditation. And that means things like psychoanalysis and hatha yoga and gestalt therapy and so on. Transformation seems to occur quite easily up to the early 20s. And so a human being will go through 4 or 5 major transformations. They'll go from infrared to red to blue to orange to green. But as they start to reach their 20s, the mind tends to start getting more rigid and sort of less willing or capable of transforming. It doesn't mean it's impossible. It just means it becomes much rarer
mm-hmm.
and harder. And you really have to kind of go at it with a seriousness and a program and a plan of doing so. But the definition of development, a very simple one, was given by Robert Keegan of Harvard. And he said, in development, the subject of one level becomes the object of the subject of the next level. So what's happening in each of these developmental shifts is that your subject starts out identified with a particular level. We can use the 7 chakras as an example. You start out identified with the first chakra, which is physiological needs and first altitude level. And so that's your subject, and you're identified with it. So because you're identified with it, you can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
It's that which is seeing. It's that which you're looking through. It's like if you're wearing red lenses, everything looks red.
Right.
And you can't see red. And so that happens as long as you're at stage one. When you move to stage two, the second chakra, which is emotional sexual energy, the purple V-meme, magical worldview, then the subject is identified with the second chakra. And the first chakra is now an object because the subject has disidentified from the first chakra and is now identified with the second. So we can now see the first chakra as an object. And same when it moves to the third chakra. While it's at the second chakra, it can't see the second chakra. The second chakra is what it's using to see it with. So it looks through the second chakra, but not at it. When you move to the third chakra, then the subject disidentifies with the second chakra, moves to the third chakra, and identifies with it. So now you can see the first and second chakras objectively, but not the third. And that is the course of development, is the subject of one level becomes the object of the subject of the next. And that occurs all the way until there is nothing but pure non-dual awareness that's neither a subject nor an object. And so it can't be made a subject out of or an object. And that is pure big mind, pure ground of all being, Godhead, the supreme identity, Brahman Atman. So the seven chakras are seven steps to becoming one with that non-dual essence. And in each case, the subject of one level becomes the object of the subject of the next. And that's what meditation does, is you look interiorly, you introspect in meditation, and you do it once or twice a day. So it's a consistent practice for 20 minutes to an hour daily. And what you're doing is you're looking within. And when you look within, you're making whatever you see an object. You can see it as an object. Mm-hmm. I'm looking within. I'm feeling myself right now. That self becomes an object. Mm-hmm. And therefore is something that I'm not identified with.
So I'm observing my greenness, or I'm observing my orangeness, or
exactly.
My blueness. Gotcha.
Exactly. And so if you're observing your greenness, you are yellow. Observing your green.
Mm-hmm.
And so that continues up into what we call third tier and finally into the seventh chakra or pure non-dual awareness. And it's the amount of time spent in meditation, because even with something like psychoanalysis, even though you introspect, it's something you do, you know, maybe once a week for 50 minutes, twice a week at most. Meditation is done once or twice a day. And it's just a very sustained interior, you know, look. And what is happening with meditation is that it is helping you move through these levels of awareness in any of the developmental lines, in any of the multiple intelligences. And it's also helping you move through states of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And states of consciousness is the fourth major dimension. And
just to recap, so one is quadrants, two is levels,
uh-huh.
Three is line.
Two is levels, the altitude.
Mm-hmm.
And three is lines.
Three is lines.
And four is states.
It's states.
Right.
Okay.
So we have quadrants, then we have levels of consciousness, and then lines of consciousness, and then states of consciousness. And states, the traditions give generally four or five natural states of consciousness. There's a waking state, there's a dream state, there's a deep sleep, formless state. Then there's something called Turiya, which literally just means the fourth. As in the fourth state. But it's really not a state. It's the ever-present witnessing consciousness. And that means that in every sentient being, and certainly in every human being, right now there is a pure self, a pure subject of awareness that is seeing all of the sights in the world around you and is hearing my voice and is hearing all sounds and is feeling all the feelings in your body and your emotions and is a pure witness of all of these. And that this pure witness is witness with a capital W. It's actually a ray of spirit. It's actually spirit looking through your eyes at any given moment. And it's not spirit identified with a particular body or identified with a particular mind or identified with a particular ego. Those are all relative selves. Those are all manifest selves. But the witness, the pure mirror mind, is infinite and is unmanifest and is itself formless and is aware of everything that is arising, but is not itself anything that's arising, but is just the vast openness or emptiness in which experiences arise, stay a bit, and go. And, of course, getting in touch with this true self, mm-hmm. capital T, capital S, mm-hmm. is one of the main goals of spiritual paths. But that is listed as one of the natural states that all human beings have. And then the fifth state that all human beings have is called Turiyatita. And that means literally non-dual. So that means that it's a shift, a subtle shift in awareness from witnessing, which is where you stand back and witness everything that's arising moment to moment to moment to moment. You're not identified with anything. You are not rejecting anything. You're not accepting anything. Just everything is arising as it is, and you are a pure mirror mind. You're a pure reflecting awareness of everything that's arising. And then all of a sudden, if you do that practice long enough, the witness itself will disappear into everything being witnessed. Mm. So all of a sudden, I'm not witnessing the mountain. I am the mountain. Mm-hmm. And I'm not witnessing the rain. I am the rain. And I'm not aware of the sun. I am the sun. Mm-hmm. And this is a pure oneness.
And this and is what often happens when people have those profound Satori-type moments, is often this type of state.
Exactly. And the important thing is to be able to differentiate these levels of consciousness from these states of consciousness, because these states of consciousness can occur at any of those levels. Mm-hmm. Those states can occur at blue. They can occur at orange. They can occur at green. They can occur at yellow. And so they're relatively independent. And that's kind of an important thing to keep in mind, because your overall psychological makeup will be the level you're at plus the state you're at. And so we have examples, for example, of meditation teachers who are in fourth and fifth state consciousness. They're in witness and non-dual awareness. But they're at the blue level. So they're very ethnocentric. They're very fundamentalist. They think that their path and their path alone is real and gives real results. There's a book called Zen at War, which caused an enormous turmoil when it came out, because it's just a compilation of great Zen masters advocating war. Mm. And this was just shocking to Buddhists in America. But these were Zen masters who were at the fifth state of consciousness, but they were at the fourth level of consciousness. So they were still at an ethnocentric, fundamentalist, militaristic level of development. Mm-hmm. Because it turns out that we interpret our states of consciousness according to our levels of consciousness. Mm. And that's another important discovery that transpersonal and integral psychology has made in the last 10 or 20 years is that, you know, you can go through these various states, but you'll interpret them according to the level or structure of consciousness that you're at. So a child age 5 years old will most likely be at the magic level, purple in spiral dynamics, or at the mythic level, blue in spiral dynamics. And an adult might be a green. Now, they'll both experience the dream state as essentially similar. In other words, they'll be in a dream state, they'll be in REM dreaming, there'll be no physical objects perceived, just subtle bodies and images and light and emotions and so on. But the child age five, who is at a mythic level, if you wake them up and ask them what they're dreaming, they'll give you a mythic account. The monster came and attacked the white knight, and the white knight, you know, fought the monster, that kind of stuff. Versus somebody who's at green, you wake them up, and they'll give you a green response. Oh, I was taking a workshop on sensitivity, and I had this understanding about myself, and so on. Mm. So the states have certain features that stay the same, but their actual interpretation will depend on the altitude that you're at when you have the state experience. And states, by the way, you can have peak experience of states. So they don't follow a necessary order. So you can be in the waking state and have a peak experience of a dream state. You can have a daydream. Mm-hmm. You can be in the waking state and have a peak experience of the witness.
The state just falls into witness. More fluctuating there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So unlike the levels of consciousness, which unfold in a very specific fashion and direction and order, states are much more fluid and much more, well, just very fluid. But what we do find, interestingly, is that what meditation does is it particularly trains awareness to penetrate all four or five major states of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And we find Evelyn Underhill, for example, summarized the four stages of meditation that all Western meditation texts give. And those were purification, illumination, dark night, and unification. Now, those are the four states of consciousness.
Mm.
Purification of the waking state, physical body, then moves into illumination in the dream state, and luminosity and bliss tend to be characteristics of the dream state. And so then it moves wakefulness from the waking state into the dream state. Individuals will often start lucid dreaming, for example. And then from there into the formless state. And that is a state of just pure absorption where nothing is arising at all, which is the dark night for Evelyn Underhill. And then from there, there's the breakthrough into witnessing or even non-dual unity.
Mm.
And so the whole goal of the meditation practices is to move your awareness successively through these major states of consciousness,
mm-hmm.
having you remain wakeful, not falling asleep,
mm-hmm.
but wakeful. And so this is a process of waking up, whereas unfolding the levels of consciousness is a process of growing up, becoming more mature and more sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
So we have these two developmental sequences.
Mm-hmm.
We have growing up and we have waking up. And they're relatively independent, but both of them are important. And so a lot of spiritual practices, those that focus on the now moment, for example, that's a pure practice of pure witnessing. Because the witness is timeless. The witness doesn't enter space or time. It's pure, timeless unqualifiable awareness. And not only is it that which is present now, listening to everything we're doing, it is what you particularly engage when you practice paying attention to the now, you practice being here, you practice witnessing your interior states. Each of those strengthens the capacity of wakefulness to move out of just the wakeful state, the waking state, and into the witnessing state.
Yep, this is one of the most powerful practices in my book, The Power of Inner Choice, is those the now practices, which is in lesson number one.
Exactly.
Another, now maybe more inspiration for people to go put those into practice.
Exactly, and I thought you handled those sections very well.
Thank you.
And showed a really good understanding of it.
Thank you, I appreciate that. Well, hey, I'm noticing time, but let's cover this the fifth element of the integral map, and then let's talk a little bit about what's going on at the integral life.
Sure. The fifth element is just called types, and it's really just kind of a loose category in which typologies that don't fit the first four can be placed. So there are types. For example, the Myers-Briggs typology, the Enneagram is a typology. Just masculine and feminine is often used, and it, particularly after the feminist movements, when both men and women are saying, "Wait a minute, what does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a woman?" There are a lot of seminars and books and teachers and so on that help people find their masculinity and femininity. And so that's another typology that's important. And some people, if you believe in astrology, that's a typology. You can include that. Mm-hmm. The point about types is that they are essentially unchanging. And so they're the same at every level of consciousness. So if you're born male, you're essentially a male at all 8 to 12 levels of altitude. You don't become female. You can, of course, switch and adopt some of the contrasexual characteristics. So in Carol Gilligan's stages of moral development, for example, where she looks at both men and women, men, she has four stages, four altitudes of development in which the moral intelligence moves through. And these altitudes, you know, we talked earlier about there being four overall sort of qualities of development. It moves from egocentric to ethnocentric to worldcentric to the fourth, which I didn't mention, which is cosmocentric, being one with everything. Carol Gilligan has four stages of female moral development. And the first stage is called selfish. And that, of course, is the egocentric stage. And the next stage is called care. And care corresponds to blue and belongingness and reaching out to care for others. And then her third stage is called universal care, because that is, corresponds to orange and means a world-centric caring and compassion for all human beings, regardless of race, color, sex, or creed. And then her fourth stage, which corresponds to yellow, is integral or integrative. And that's where both the male and the female integrate the contrasexual characteristics. So males start to integrate female qualities, and females start to integrate male qualities. So those typologies are just there for those who want to work with some of these extra characteristics. A lot of people find the Enneagram very helpful. And the point, of course, is that if you're, you know, a born five on an Enneagram, you tend to stay five. So these are typologies and qualities that are not changing from level to level, but can be very, very important in helping you to get an understanding of your own terrain and what's going on with you.
Well, that's one of the keys, is all these different perspectives of seeing ourselves instead of just being in ourselves.
Right.
And that's what's so brilliant about this whole integral map, that we've got these five elements that you can come and look at. And I think you've done a beautiful job at, in a I'm impressed with us that we did this all in just a little over an hour.
That's right.
and maybe you can point to two things. One is for people that want, that are fascinated by this, that maybe feel like I might have missed something, what resources and maybe of your book would you recommend as purchases?
Sure. Probably the simplest introduction would be the Integral Vision. And then some others are what we call the Everything books, A Theory of Everything and A Brief History of Everything.
Mm-hmm. Love both of those.
And then there is the CD set that you mentioned.
Cosmic Consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
I love
Cosmic with a K.
Yes.
And that has, I appreciate your kind words about that. That's done very well.
It really was.
So I'm happy with how Tammy Simon and Sounds True handled that. They did a terrific job. And then there are websites. And essentially I would point to integrallife.com.
Okay.
And you can find introductory material to the integral model there. You can find information on where you can actually get certified degrees in the integral model. We have two graduate-level accredited degree programs, one at JFK in California and the other at Fielding University, which is something like the third largest online carrier of education.
Wow.
And they do a really good job as well.
And this could be for somebody that then wants, maybe as a consultant, that wants to then bring in these principles into corporate world, or I'm sure there's obviously lots of applications.
That's right. And for somebody who wants to actually get some training, we do have integral coaching. And you can also find that on the site. And that's a very popular program and essentially takes all five of these elements and has you do exercises that help all five of them become healthy and transformative.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a popular program. And I highly recommend it. They've done a really good job of taking all of these elements, which, you know, when you hear them for the first time, it can sound, you know, just like it's a bit much, because it's not just some simple thing like, you know, the Enneagram. The Enneagram is one of five things that's being included, and so people can tend to kind of, you know, short circuit on hearing this, but as you look at them, you realize that they're things that are already present in your awareness, whether you know it or not. You're already using I, we, and it, and you already have multiple intelligences, and you're already at various levels of development in each of them, and you already have a capacity to move through particular states. So they really are parts of your own present awareness, but it's the first time that all of these dimensions have been brought together into one model so that we can, you know, look at our overall state of being, and then it's very, very useful for determining, I need, you know, I'm doing fine in my levels of consciousness, but my states of consciousness, I'm still stuck in waking state, and I don't lucid dream, I don't hardly dream at all, I don't have any interior awareness, I need to take up meditation. So it's really useful in helping to determine the strengths and weaknesses in your overall self, mm-hmm. and then make decisions about what aspects you want to work on, mm-hmm. where you want to get coaching or practice or training. And again, it's going to be very rare that you find a coach who includes all five of these dimensions. They're usually going to focus on one dimension or a couple of practices, usually one quadrant. So you have to kind of put it together yourself. And
they can tap into some of the resources at your site and get practices that are custom made for them. And also you've got at startyourintegrallife.com is where there's a, you actually have a free 30-day membership where people can come in and tap into interviews you've done. And,
right.
And what a rich resource that is.
Yes, thank you for mentioning that. And they will get, they can find an Integral Life Premium membership there, and they'll get a free DVD and two CDs and a month free of membership. And this is all our attempt to take the model and shake it down, make it as accessible as we possibly can, and then include practices that you can do to, you know, understand it better and manifest it in your life, feel the dimensions we're talking about, see how they operate, see how they work in yourself and in others, and therefore carry your own human potential growth and evolution forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a fabulous resource, and I want to encourage everybody that's listening onto this call is to at least pursue one of the paths, whether it's picking up one of the books, if you're a reader, Cosmic Consciousness, I think is a must. Everybody ought to have that. And, you know, depending on your interests, the coaching, the certifications, the Integral Life monthly program. And so maybe just in closing, if there's maybe just one piece of advice to leave people with in moving forward and applying and using the integral map in their life, maybe where's the place to start as we leave them?
Well, I'd certainly have to, you know, just point to one of those resources that you mentioned and point out that it's really good news that one of the results of the last 20 or 30 years of the human potential movement is, which was basically putting every transformative practice we could find from around the world on the table and looking at them, is that we are finally starting to come up with maps and models and frameworks of the human mind and the human condition that take all of these into account. And this is the first time this has happened in history. It's the first time any single human being has access to the entire world's store of transformative practices. Let alone having maps and models that include them.
And
so
this can help us
extraordinary.
Evaluate.
It's an extraordinary opportunity. So please take advantage of it any way you possibly can.
Absolutely. Well, Ken, this was fabulous. I would so love to have you back again and dive into make this a prerequisite, this call, and then maybe you'd be up to coming back at some point and diving even deeper into some of these topics now that we've got a first level of awareness here.
Well, let's talk about that.
Okay. Thank you so much. Well, and just thank you all to our listeners. And, Ken, I know I've got people on the line that will want to thank you, so I'm going to just open up the line so you can get a big thank you.
Okay.
The lines are open. You can thank Ken.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Call.
Bye, everyone. Thank you, Ken.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ken.
Awesome.
Kind of fun,
all
huh?
Here.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye. That was great.